Is there something wrong?
Warning. Life support failure on all decks. Abandon ship.
Maybe it is time to take command.
Bridge to captain.
Join Jan Shaw and her guests as they discuss cosmic creating and the path to reclaiming our power as cosmic creators.
Library computer, data being received.
To go where too few have gone before. A production of Cosmic Reality Radio. And you are live.
Thank you, Nancy, and welcome to this week's Cosmic Creating Show. I'm your host, Jan Shaw, the Success Alchemist, and you can find me at thesuccessalchemist.net. And if you go there, you can get a free download of my Dream Achievers Success Kit and also take a look at what I do to help people develop the mindset for manifestation. And I've got lots of articles on there as well about spiritual and personal development and techniques for manifestation. So go along and take a look. And for my regular listeners, of course, you'll know that my mission here is to bring to you informative and inspiring guests to help with your conscious evolution and to create your reality, the reality that you want to live in. So today I'm delighted to welcome Carol Fitzpratt. Oh, spit my words out. Carol Fitzpatrick, who is an internationally known seer, empathic, intuitive, and guide. Through energetic healings and activations, she supports world servers and visionary leaders in creating the shift to oneness consciousness. She's author of two books and a founder of the World Service Organization Center for Planetary Awakening. And I first met Carol going back, quite a few years now, when Carol got involved in the Festival of Enlightenment that I co-organized in 2011. And I have to say, Carol, that without you and a couple of other people, I don't think the festival would have happened, or certainly not the way it did happen. So I'm so grateful for your involvement, for your team's involvement, and for getting to know you and having you on the show today. So welcome, Carol.
Gosh, thank you so much. You know, I've told you this before, but my recognition of you was instantaneous. And I think that really is the way that light family really works. You know, you recognize one another and you know that you have mutual and shared work together. So whatever that was, it certainly was such a powerful, powerful experience to bring us together.
Absolutely. Yes. And I'm so grateful for it as well. So, Carol, would you start by just giving us some background about your story and how you came to be doing what you're doing?
Sure. I don't really know how far to go back, but I'll just go back from the time that I remembered and understood who I really am. And it really actually happened in a crib where I was holding my younger brother and feeling and seeing these light beings around us and knowing that they were actually my true parents, that my parents were certainly the people that were going to take care of us. But I just absolutely knew that these beautiful beings that were around me and really holding me, they truly were and are my family. And of course, those kinds of experiences, impressions as, you know, growing up, I remember really by the time I was 5 saying, I have to remember. I began to recognize that the adults around me were completely disconnected. I held faith that the children would remember or do remember. And I can remember almost by the age of 7 just totally lamenting, thinking, oh my goodness, I think I'm here by myself. I don't see anybody, even the kids are disconnected. And so that's pretty early on, I made a promise to myself that no matter what happened in my life, I had to protect this light inside me, because I could still sense and feel and see the beings of light around me. I didn't really have a name for them. I just knew that I had this incredible sense of love for the whole world. And that was, you know, not excluding or juxtapositioning, just being a little kid in life. You know, how do you even have words for that? I didn't really have any words for it. I just knew that that's the way it was for me. And people used to always make comment to my parents about, you know, I didn't seem like my other siblings, or, you know, I was the joke about, you know, the milkman's daughter. Yeah, I was the adopted one because I just didn't seem like I was part of the family per se. And so I went along in life and made many, many compromises to that inner light. And I got to a point in my, I think it was like really in my mid-30s, pretty much all the compromises and all the ways that I emulated to try to be in the world and do it the way that I was shown by the world to be in life, I really started to just completely lose everything that I had ever worked for. You know, my marriage, my business, my place in community, it just all started, the wheels of the illusion and the fact that I was really starting to, I had gotten further and further away from that alignment, that internal alignment, to the point where I really felt like I was so completely disconnected. I can remember saying to myself, as I was flailing around trying to save my business, my this, my that, this was in the late 80s. I just said to myself, if I lose this sight of this inner spark, this inner light that's in me, I might as well die because I won't have any way to be guided. And I can remember early in the morning, really calling, reaching out to somebody that I didn't really know even that well and said, I'm in such a dark space, I just don't even know what to do next. And it was something in my world where, you know, it was like the end of the end of the end for the things that I'd been involved in. And oops, sorry, I'm going to shut this off.
That's okay. Nancy often does that. has her voicemail going, so we're used to it here.
Yeah, I forgot to unplug my phone. So, and that was, well, isn't that an interesting little metaphor there? You know, God calls, right? You reach you reach the end of your rope and you recognize that you just can't do it the way you've done it before. It's just not working. So anyway, this friend came over and rather than giving me sympathy, what he really said was, you are the most stubborn, egoic, willful person I've ever met. Not once since I've known you have you ever asked for help. Have you ever expressed gratitude? You just think that your way is the highway. And he said, have you ever gotten on your hands, on your knees, and put your hands together and asked for help? And he said, you know, here you are, you've called me out of desperation, but what am I to do? And he just pretty much, you know, gave it to me.
Read you the riot act.
He really did. It was such a wonderful wake-up call. And I did the begrudging prayer, but my prayer was, if you're really there, if there really is a God, I need to get my guidance literally. And in that moment, I made the promise that if I get it literally, I will, to the best of my ability, honor that. And oh my goodness, the literal answer to things started happening. And my life from that point forward was wild and crazy. And all of my senses started opening up. And before you know it, I was living in a higher senses technicolor world where I was seeing light and beings. And, you know, I certainly went through probably close to 10 years of what I called my lessons, and these were from my energetic teachers, who started appearing. And I was told one time, because the same friend took me up to a kirtan, a satsang, where all of the various different faiths were being honored, but they also did a healing circle. And over the year or so that I went there, just about every single Thursday and Sunday, the leaders of the circle would put me into the circle. And this incredible Shakti, powerful energy, was like feeling like my whole body was in an electric socket, and my whole body would flail around, and I'm saying, what is going on? So from there, I probably spent another 12 to 15 years at that point in this late 80s, early 90s, asking the question, why is my body shaking so much? What is going on here? How do I stop it? And of course, I was a single parent. I had to work, and I would go to work every day because I let go of my business. I had to file bankruptcy. I had to sit in the very house that I ran my business out of and wait 2 years until I could file. And then up into Washington, D.C., I went, and this energy was kept going through me like nobody's business. And I would, these same beings would start, you know, pushing energy at me and visuals. And the only thing I could do was write. Like, I would take my lunch hour and I'd go outside and I would write, just to get the charge out of my system so I could get through the day. I'd get home, it would be the same thing. And spirit would send me to do all kinds of things. And I didn't understand it, but I knew that I was committed. I knew that I had to follow through because that was a promise that I made to myself. So in other words, no matter how ridiculous, no matter how it didn't make sense to anybody else, if they said, go stand on your head, that's exactly what I would do, which they never told me that. But what I recognized is what I was being prepared for was first the purification of my own system, because the Shakti, the energy that was going through me, I found out years later that what was really happening with me is I was experiencing an enormous Kundalini awakening. All that energy at the base of my spine, it was just time for me to open up and awaken. But I had absolutely no concept of what it was. I was living a very standardized, you know, Irish American, grow your business, raise your kids, go to church, and that kind of a life. And I didn't have any context whatsoever. So it took me a while to really immerse myself. And certainly that first experience that my friend took me to, the kirtan, the satsang environment, it was more of an Eastern path. It was a healer's path. And I realized, oh, I see, my path is one of bhakti, which is the path of the heart, to open the heart. And I was, through the years, I was led to do a lot of like energetic healings. They were showing me how the power that goes through me can manifest physical healing in people. I was certainly told to say things. I could see things. I got to where I was seeing other people's energy bodies and these light beings that were hovering over the top of the person. And one very pronounced time, I was coming off the train, coming home from work in Fredericksburg, and I looked over and there was this huge 30-foot gladiator of light walking, hovering over this man who was a homeless person pushing a shopping cart. When I would get off of work or on lunch, going through those main DuPont Circle or in the parks in Washington, D.C., I would see a homeless person, and what I would see was this incredibly blue violet light around them. And my teacher showed me this is don't ever judge anyone for their outer covering because you have no idea who they are. That homeless person, for instance, may be a master giving darshan to all who pass by. And there were many, many. I remember, I guess it was probably 2000. I went through 8 years working up in Washington, D.C. on a national project during the Clinton administration. And on April 1st, 2000, I was in the midst of launching actually an organization for community leaders for the organization I worked for. And it was all the channeled writing that was coming through. And my guides kept saying, this is not meant to be controlled. This is meant it's meant for freedom. And, so sure enough, here I am, I'm loyal to a fault. I'm putting this organization together. We've had our first board meeting with the president of our association there and the lieutenant governor of Maryland at the time. And I come home, home as in back to the office, and I get a call from our executive director saying, you know, get your butt in here. And 3 weeks later, on April Fool's Day of 2000, no less, I should remember that as the joke, cosmic joke on me, I got fired in a political firestorm. It wasn't about me, but it was, you know, several different organizations in competition for the program that I was leading. And so I didn't skip a beat. I came back and I took the same stuff. I organized the spiritual group that I was a part of at that point and asked them to become the directors. And we started delivering the program content that had been channeled to me for, by that time, it was close to 10 years. And then I was told to walk away from the river. The name of the organization I formed was River of Light. And I was very confused because I poured my heart and soul into it and a lot of money, a lot of my savings. And then I said, okay, what's next? And then literally right around that time frame, I met my husband in 2001. I was told that I was going to meet a man that would become very important to me. Did not recognize him. But he's the one that really started to put a microphone in front of me and say, just speak, you know, speak to what comes to you. And that's very much what started my current cycle of creation that I've been in. And of course, my vision opened up. I think in part my life, the way that I was led to structure it is I live in the woods. I live in a log cabin. I have a lot of nature around me. I do not live a frenetic lifestyle, and it affords me the opportunity to really go deep and to do the let go so that I can see, I can receive, I can know the things that are being gifted to me. And I have discovered that my only responsibility really is to be true to myself, which, you know, goes back to that inner light, right? It goes back to the earliest memory of how much are you going to honor yourself. And so everything that I teach or everything I know, everything that I share is really coming directly from spirit, from that place of direct knowing. And it's been quite a journey, and it continues to be a journey, because the guides say that we know everything, as in we, the embodied ones, we know everything. But I also say most of us don't want to really know everything. We only want to know a part of about our lives that bring us a greater joy. And I truly believe, with my current mission about ushering in oneness as a grid of light, a planetary grid of light, that most of us really want to feel connected, not just to one another, because that's part of it, but it's really connected to our source. and to align with, embody us as source beings expressing as light without hesitation, and knowing that we've actually come here for that very purpose and for no other purpose than to fully express as an amplified version of source. And so I feel like I'm not at the end of my journey. I feel like I'm actually pretty much at the beginning of my journey of just really learning how to trust and being bedrock about that, regardless of how someone says or reacts. Or, you know, the biggest challenge always is family, right? The people that we love most in the world, those very same people that I came into life with early on, let me tell you, they do not get who I am. They have not a clue.
I can empathize with that completely. I have the same issue with my family.
Yeah, and I say birth family, and then I say soul family or light family. Mm. And light family, went like what we were just saying, when we meet one another, there's just an immediate knowing, an immediate acceptance. You don't have to know anything about the person, and yet you know everything about that person because you're connected through the frequency, through the vibration and the soul resonance. And the other stuff, the other personality stuff, is just the window dressing.
Yes, indeed. Yes. So I'd like to just go back to what you said right at the beginning of your story about seeing light beings. And then later on, you know, when you had your kick up the butt by the friend that you contacted, you know, about and you actually prayed, didn't you implied that you didn't actually believe in God at that point, saying, you know, if you're really there, did that experience early on with the light beings, did that not connect in your mind or in your heart to the being, the existence of spirit or God or whatever you like to call it?
Exactly. I knew and had a deep knowing of who I am. And when I was a little girl and my parents took us to church, I would sit in kindergarten and think, this is like so completely disconnected. It doesn't mean anything. And the best that I like to do is I like to stay in the sanctuary with my parents. I didn't like to go into that space where we were just kids and they were talking to us like we didn't know anything. But even in church, I would watch the light come in to the sanctuary, and the minister even was completely disconnected. The people in the church were disconnected. It's like there was this complete separation going on, and yet the light was still there. The light was available to anybody who wished to accept it. And of course, I always wished to accept it because that was my light family showing up. And so I always had this I just felt like I was being filled with the spirit that was so familiar to me. But I was also a bit inwardly despondent because I lived in this completely disconnected world. And that was from a very, very early age. And yet at the same time, what I really share this with people that I work with now, is when we're really tiny, we always pick a person that we decide is going to be our protector, or at least is going to get us through this world until such point that we could figure it out. And so I chose my mother on that. My mother was the person that I'm saying, well, she's going to become the person that I'm going to rely upon. And of course, no matter who you pick, it doesn't even matter who you pick. You know, you're always going to be disappointed, because the point of it is nobody can get you connected except yourself. Nobody can help you to remember who you are except yourself. But at the same time, the way that I chose to get through the world is to be a helper. You know, to sweep the floor, to pick up, to do little things that I felt might make my mother's life easier. And I would always stay very, very quiet. And to this day, my mother tells me that I was really shy. Well, actually, I wasn't shy at all. I just had enough wherewithal to say that, you know, there's a lot of disconnect, anger, frustration going on here, and I don't want to add to that, so just be quiet. And so my connection to my source was inside myself, but over time, as you become more and more wanting to be a part of the human family, let's say, I wanted to do things. I wanted to be the good kid. I wanted to be the good student. I wanted to do the things that maybe, you know, everybody else was doing. I wanted to be a part of that. And then, of course, as I got older, I had a childhood friend who had been subjected to an incestuous relationship, and I wanted to be her protector. That same kind of experience went on to me, not from the same person, but from a different person, and feeling threatened. You know, I was telling my mother actually very recently that it wasn't the molestation part of it that was so scary. It was the fact that the way he did it, the way he threatened me, which was to hold me under the water. It happened in a swimming pool when I was 12, and he was basically showing me, I have power over you, and unless you let me do to you what I want to do to you, I'm going to drown you. And that was in the privacy. All my other family members had gone inside. So that kind of experience is an experience, but then, okay, now let me go tell somebody so I can be protected. And I wasn't protected, and it went on and on and on and on, not being protected. So what that did for me is, okay, I'm putting my trust in the human family, but the human family is not protecting me. So I'm toggling into, I'm just a little kid, right? And so that's what happens to all of us, is we go through life and we kind of lose our power. It chips away at us. And also going to church, I knew for sure that my parents really didn't believe in God per se. I always got the feeling as a little kid, they felt it was the right thing to do, but they didn't necessarily believe. And of course, I could tell they didn't because I could see the light. And that doesn't mean that they were not good people. I think my parents were absolutely phenomenal people and still are. But those are the kinds of things that started to happen with me. And I'm the one that sacrificed myself. I'm the one that reacted as a victim. I'm the one that started to hide from the world. I'm the one that married somebody that didn't respect me because I didn't, you know, respect myself. And so, you know, I basically went further and further and further away from allowing it. Sort of, I used to have a boss he was from the Bronx, and he used to always say when we would do our funding proposals, he said, "Carol, we want to be really generous. Like, if you have a slice of bologna, you want to share this that you have, but you don't want to give so much of this away that you don't have anything left for yourself." And I always go back to that. He was certainly using it in terms of business. But I really use that as a metaphor for myself, for ourselves. You know, we don't want to give so much of ourselves away that we truly lose sight of who we are. And so that's really what I did, is I did have a belief and a knowing, but over the years, I didn't have any evidence showing up to reflect back to me that I was okay, that other people were connected. It was me, myself, and I out in the wilderness trying to do the best I could with trying to emulate what it was like to be a human being. And actually, I have to say, I really didn't do a very good job at it. I did not do a good job protecting my inner light. I allowed myself to get into harm's way. I allowed myself to compromise on my integrity. I mean, all those things. And so by the time I finally got on my knees, I kind of didn't believe that there was anything else that was going to redeem me, or I didn't know. I was really, I was at my last straw. So So by the mere fact that just the tiny little bit of surrender that I did, which is I'm beside myself, I've really screwed it up so badly that I actually have not held this light inside of me and protected it to the best of my ability the way that I promised myself as a tiny little kid. And yet that was all an illusion of the mind. I found out very quickly, you know, that the moment you open your door, the door back up, your heart back up, it's there. The only thing that really was happening is I was blocking it. And it's really a trick of the mind. It really is. And mm-hmm. my higher senses that I've had really all my life that I, you know, kind of pushed aside because I wanted to put my focus on, you know, what it meant to be a human doing my thing. And still to this day, I still have, I sometimes pine away at why can't my family members see me? Why can't they see who I actually am? You know, and then I realize, oh, that's just me. That's just me in my pity. That's just me in my not accepting the fact that I'm a light being, not accepting that I'm an embodied one. And my job isn't to be more human. My job is to be more of a light being.
And yeah, it's quite a challenge, really. You know, everything you've been saying since we started the show is really, to me, illuminating, for want to use a pardon the pun, as it were. But it's just showing the difference between what we're conditioned to believe life is all about and that human, you know, 3D life, and the what the higher purpose of us being here is. And I think, you know, personally, ever since I kind of moved away from that conventional life and corporate life and everything else, there's still this kind of conditioning that's still there that says, but why aren't you doing this and why aren't you doing that? You know, it's like a tug of war almost, yeah, between the 3D and what we really have come to understand is our true purpose.
Yes. Yeah.
And I think that's a challenge for a lot of people that have awakened and light workers, that they're being pulled in two different directions.
Yeah, and I tell people you cannot change you. You cannot change your life until you're willing to actually take a step to honor yourself. You can do all the right things and pretend that you're doing everything right and be so completely miserable inside yourself that you get to the point where you don't even want to be on the planet anymore. But the moment that you do something, you know, again, move away from the fear dynamic of if I really show up as my authentic self, the people around me are going to shame me, which, you know what, if they do, they do. And the thing about it is you almost instantaneously find people that recognize you.
I mean, yes, I think it's interesting, you know, since I would say from the point that I left the UK and came over to the US to organize the festival, I was connecting with a whole different group of people. You know, it seemed like everybody that I was connecting with were of that soul family, consciousness, spiritual kind of beingness. Yeah. And the didn't attract into my life the people that weren't that way.
Yes, because you showed up as your most authentic self and people could see you.
Yeah, it's interesting. I love what you were saying earlier as well about, you know, feeling disconnected, feeling separate. I think that's characteristic of a lot of light workers. When I first heard the term light worker, which was actually Christmas of 2009, I'd never heard the term before. And when I actually Googled it and I saw these descriptions of, you know, what are the kind of things that light workers go through, it really explained how I'd felt as a child. I just felt like I was totally in the wrong place, didn't have anything in common with any of the other kids, and just felt completely isolated. And I think this is a very common thing as well, isn't it?
Oh, it absolutely is. Just about everybody that I speak with or guide through their process, that you could almost check off the boxes. And it doesn't even matter what their story is. It's what's how they felt growing up and still feel to a certain extent. And I find, too, that if people don't shift out of that by the time they're in their early 40s, they're in trouble. They start to feel very deadened to the world and demoralized. But if they can shift out of it in their 30s, they're on their way. But even now, it's the energy is so amazing. I mean, the new Earth frequency is definitely in the planetary system. And so in a way, it doesn't have to be so traumatic for people to really make that switch. It's kind of like a toggle switch that goes off inside of you. And the pressure in the way that you've been living your life through your mind and through the have to's and the supposed to's and the conforming, and that inner signal inside of yourself gets so strong that you just say, I just can't do it this way anymore. It doesn't matter who I lose or what I lose. I just can't do this anymore. But now the energy seems to be much more gentle and supportive in that sense. And really, we've gone through, just since I've awakened, three major waves of consciousness shifts. And the more of us that are in those higher frequency fields, it makes it easier for the other ones to pop up, if you will, to do that toggling. And then you look around and you go, oh my goodness, you know, where have you been all my life? I've been looking for you. And oh, how happy I am that you've arrived.
Yes. It's interesting what you're saying about, you know, shift by the 30s. By your 30s, I was in my mid 50s when mine happened. So I was obviously a late developer, but yeah, it was a complete change, not, you know, from a consciousness level, but also from a practical level of just doing something completely different. And I'd felt that pressure, you know, this isn't right. And it was a dark night of the soul. And perhaps what you were saying about it being gentler now, that maybe people aren't having to go through such a dark night of the soul in order to awaken. But certainly I know many people who have had to go through that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, definitely. Definitely. Yeah, especially the first and second waivers, as I call them, because they didn't have anything to really model themselves. They didn't have anybody to say, oh, I did it this way, and you could do it. You're going to do it your way, but there is life on the other side of this. And I find that the quote unquote teachers of the 60s and 70s and even 80s, early 80s, they emulated the old way. They were speaking the language of the heart, but they were actually doing the mind way. And that's not the way it is. And I watch children now under the age of 10 to 12 now, and they don't have any of that. They just have the heart way, and they're in their heart, and there's just no other way. They don't even think that there's another way. And they just show up and speak from their heart and live from their heart. And, you know, there's a lot of child prodigies coming in because they're completely connected into the universal grid, which gives us every ounce of innovation and understanding and science and creativity that is needed to really enjoy this world. And so the rest of us are kind of still toggling back and forth, still integrating, still sort of healing inner child stuff, and still kind of on some level negotiating, saying, well, can't I still be in my human family mode, in my mind mode, and still kind of pretend on that level? And can't I also be in my heart space? And what I'm finding is it's an all or nothing. You have to jump all the way into who you are and start to heal from the higher consciousness perspective, not from the lower consciousness level upward. It's got to be from the higher consciousness level integrated into the consciousness of the body. And the body's experienced everything is connected to the human DNA lineage, but you're not, you know, you're not, I'm not, we're not of the human lineage. We come from our star lineage, and that's why we're here. We have to recognize that is why we're here on the planet. So not to pretend otherwise.
I guess also we have a challenge with the pressures of just the practicalities of living in this world, you know, in terms of, and I think this is where the tug of war comes, because, you know, there's the conditioning again about how you survive on this planet in terms of, you know, you have to work, you have to bring money in, you have to do all these different things, which you tend to see that as something almost opposite to the you know, in terms of the beingness of really fulfilling that that path of oneness and working on the spiritual and everything else. Do you see that as well in the people that you work with, this kind of conflict?
Yeah, but it still ends up being a trap of the mind. The mind says, but I want to have the things that I've been taught that I do want. What they don't recognize is by letting go of those, putting yourself in that box of wanting those things that you've been told that you want, the trap is to think that if you really honor your heart, that you won't get any of those things. You won't realize any of those, you won't have those experiences. And the opposite is actually true. The more that you pretend and that you go along and you sacrifice yourself to the mind programs, I'm going to say, the less efficient, the less joyous, the less you honor or want those things, to the point where you don't even want to be on the planet. It can get that bad. And instead, when you honor the being part of you, and recognize that you're going to listen to the signals of the soul as is connected to the heart of who you are. You have to remember, we live in a doing world. We love to do. We love to create. We love to serve. We love to do all kinds of things. And for the 7 billion people on the planet, there are as many jobs or ways of creating as we can even imagine. And so to think that we can only live our life a certain way is kind of nonsensical. But we also have to learn to trust in the innate inner knowing that is trying to show us and deliver to us the feeling of incredible joyousness. We have forgotten how to trust that. But when we do trust that, we absolutely get to use all of our worldly skills. But those worldly skills are only following the promptings of the inner knowing. And,
right. Yeah.
And so we end up on the other side of that living incredible lives and lives that we would not have been able to dream into creation because we didn't have the skill set for that. You know, if you are used to being told what to do, that your life has to be this or that or this or that, but you have an inner feeling inside of you and visions. Most of us light beings, I don't think there's a single one that I've talked with in our light family that did not have an inner vision of their life, the way that they were going to be living from a very early age. And most of them that I talk with, not so much these days, but it's, where is that? Why am I not experiencing that? And the answer would always come back. You're not going to get to it the way that you're trying to do it. You've got to get into your heart. You've got to start listening to your intuition. You've got to start listening and surrendering to the fact there's a higher vibrational field here. And you can't get to it through your mind. You've got to do it through your heart. And they would flounder around and get very scared, as we all do. But I just talked with a friend of mine out in the Southwest earlier today, and we were talking about that. And she says, oh, my God, those visions that I've had and the things that you told me 10 years ago, they're finally here. They're finally here, and they're rolling out exactly the way I saw it and you were saying, and on and on. And of course, the question was what did it for you? And her response was, I finally let go and fully trusted my heart.
Yes, and you were saying earlier that we've forgotten how to do that, but actually we're also taught not to trust, aren't we? I mean, you know, I've worked with several people who were very psychic and intuitive as children, and in one case, she was born into a very religious family. She went through an exorcism because the parents thought she was evil because she could hear animals talking and she could, you know, really pick up if people were lying and all sorts of things. And it's also something that happens, you know, in education as well, that there is, despite what Einstein said, that there is no recognition of the power of intuition and imagination.
But don't you think that is really, I mean, it's a product of our society. It's a product of, you know, somewhere, some group of people saying we need a lot of workers. We don't need a bunch of people telling us what to do. We just need a bunch of workers.
Absolutely. Yes. And the more intuitive you are, the more you see through it, don't you? So they don't want that to happen.
Exactly. So as soon as you wait, you can see what's happening and you say, I'm not going to do that. Well, you become the rusty nail that gets to be pounded into the earth so that the others don't wake up. The others conform and follow and are, you know, they drink the Kool-Aid of this is the way everybody does it here. You know, when my young childhood friend, our awakening together was, my father said that all fathers do this to their young daughters as a rite of passage. And she was told, your father does this to you too. And I said, what are you talking about? No, he doesn't. You know, it's that same kind of thing. You know, we're told those kind of bill of goods all the time. If you don't like your job and do everything that you're told, you're going to lose it all and you're going to be the outcast of society. You'll never be able to work again in this town.
Yeah, it's using fear as a weapon, isn't it?
Well, it really is. And it works because the human part of ourselves is very tribal. We want to belong. We want to be included. And anybody in a tribe that's considered, you know, a little out there or going after a different signal in their mind and heart is considered to not be as useful as somebody else. And yet,
yes,
we celebrate artists. We celebrate scientists. We celebrate wonderful musicians. And yet at the same time, there's even a tolerance for what's acceptable in that also.
And yes, it's the pressure to conform, isn't it, that is behind all of this. I just want to go back again to what you said earlier about how you felt going to church with your parents. And I know when I was growing up, my mother was, I was brought up in the Church of England, and I never felt any connection whatsoever to what that whole ceremony, teaching, anything. And it's true what you were saying, there really was no alternative, but there didn't seem to be any, what's the word I'm looking for, any substance to what was going on in the church. And you know, at that time it's either religion or it's nothing spiritual at all. And yet more and more people now are moving into a non-religious spirituality that I think is much healthier than some of the original religions.
Yeah, spirituality and religion are completely separate designations of consciousness. Religion is structure and spirituality is the juice. It's the flow. It's the light. And spirituality is not, you know, woo-woo or, you know, any of that. It is the flow of the light. And so, yeah, when I was in church, I definitely could feel that the people around me, there were a few people that were connected, but not very many. And more importantly, the minister wasn't connected at all. You know, there were these beautiful angelic beings dancing around the minister and the people. I would see the lights hovering over the people. And, you know, it's an invitation. But the words, actually, I really felt like the words that were spoken, they didn't mean anything to anybody because they were being spoken by the mind and they were being spoken under the intention that if I speak these words, I'll be good. If I don't speak these words, I'll be bad. And so there was a fear vibration. And there was also this just kind of show up in your Sunday best and to demonstrate that you're being good. So this idea of being good or bad, you know, you go to church and you're good. You don't go to church, you're bad. And so that's all a kind of a mind creation. But at the same time, if you express great love and you're in that space of bliss, people look at you like you're touched, like there's something wrong with you.
You're weird.
You're weird. Yes.
Yeah. And the other thing about religion is it represents that God being as being totally outside of you. It's like you prostrate yourself before this higher being rather than this concept of, you know, we all have that spirit within us. So it's, again, it's very disempowering. It's very controlling. You know, it's another form, I always say religion is another form of government. You know, it's another authority we're meant to subject ourselves to.
Yes. And yet I my guides have said that all paths lead to oneness. It doesn't matter how you get there. It doesn't matter how you have your aha moment and to remember who you really are. You know, if you need or you feel that, you know, going into an organized sense to space to get you in that feeling mode, then so be it. But at some point, just about everyone that I know that I've spoken with says, oh, I understand it now. Spirit really isn't in the words. It's not in the ritual. It's in my heart. I can feel something's stirred inside of me and I can feel it now. And it does. I still go to church every once in a while, with various family members, my daughter being one of them. And when I moved back from Washington, D.C. to Fredericksburg in 1998, my guides told me to go to three churches in a row. And it was around Easter time. It was before Easter. And when I went into the Episcopal Church where good old George Washington used to go to church in Old Town, I saw this light come down, and it was just as it's like a ray of sunshine that was upon the people in the front, and it happened to be the time of communion. And what I noticed is communion, the light wasn't going through the people ministering to the people going up. The light was going into those who were willing to receive. It was not a ministering through someone to someone. It was a direct activation. And I thought that was really very interesting. And there were other instances where I was guided to go to a local church. We'd heard that the Mother Mary statue was weeping. It was a church up in Woodbridge. And I went up and I saw the beautiful angelic beings and the mother energy, and she was ministering to anyone who was opening their heart to suspend their belief in separation. And I think those acts of quasi miracles, if you see, even with a doubt, you're saying, oh, it wasn't really real or whatever. Really, I think the divine really does manifest, because I've seen it so many times, in a way that it gives an invitation to people to just to drop all the dogma and let go. And I remember I was in relationship with a man that I thought I was going to marry. This was mid-90s when we went to this church. He was Catholic. He'd been away because he'd been divorced, and so he'd been ousted from the church. And he told me many years later that that time in that church, he opened his heart and recognized that, you know, spirit and just it's the love of God in every person that matters, not the dogma. And so I realized that there are beautiful acts coming straight from the divine to help people to realign themselves to what really those religious houses are actually all about, which is to open the heart and to receive the grace of God within.
Yes, it's getting that invitation, isn't it?
Definitely.
That opens people up. I mean, when I had my, I would say my visitation, I shared it a couple of times, but it was, you know, when I was going through that dark night of the soul, and I was actually mucking out my horse's stable at the time. And what happened actually brought me to tears, because I felt touched and I felt visited, and I had a message that it was time to move on. And that was really, you know, the point at which everything changed. But I'd never had an experience like that before. But obviously, I think I'd been going through these experiences leading up to that to be open to it.
Yes. Yeah, and I see, because I do have fairly strong inner sight that, especially it opens up when I'm around like-hearted people, high vibrational people in community. And I see that all the time. Angelic beings or light beings will sort of step into someone's auric field, and that person, I witness them, they will just spontaneously begin weeping or emoting, and that's what they experience, like by the grace of God, you know, is touching their heart and is opening them up. And they recognize that they truly are one with their creator. And they start to really feel the oneness in community, that they are connected, that there's an entire grid system here full of light beings that are here to amplify and to raise the frequency of this planet. But yeah, I see it all the time. Sometimes, and that's, again, I think that people that experience physical healing, the guides will say physical healing is the easiest for someone to recognize, because all they need to do is, you know, suspend their misalignment, suspend the separation for even just for an instant will allow the body to come back into homeostasis. And so it's just, I don't know, it's just such a magical place to be, really. For many, many years, I didn't really want to be here. But right around 2005, this was after I was, you know, doing public channelings and starting to work with people, I was told by my energetic teachers, it's time for you to come into your body now. And I thought, no way, no how, because I was seeing everything from like an airplane level. I really wasn't connected to or attached to the human emotions. And I really wasn't relating to the people around me, because like when you're in bliss, nothing really measures up to that. But I remember saying, oh my gosh, if I do that, I might get trapped in my body. Like I've seen so many times with other souls, you know, they come in and they get trapped and they forget how to get out. And it took me probably another year or so to finally say, well, okay. Well, okay. And I did, I started like, okay, I'll allow myself to do that. And I found that my perspective shifted. I could still see everything. I could still, quote unquote, know everything if someone asked me. But I was seeing it and I was feeling it more from an empathic, intuitive vantage point. I started developing greater empathy for the human condition. I think I started losing more of my victim consciousness, and I also started to recognize that I needed to heal this humanness in me and become a better person, a better parent, a better friend, you know, a better partner, and thinking, it's great to be out of body, but if I'm really going to be here, I guess I really do have to make peace with my body, my body's consciousness. And so I found that the nature of my work started to shift and change in the way that I was able to, for lack of a better word, minister to people. And,
right.
And that's, I think that's about the time that the global consciousness, the grid lines, the planetary grid lines started really opening up too. It's sort of like, you can't be the ground crew if you're not going to land someplace.
Yes, absolutely. And that leads us nicely into the break, because believe it or not, we're at the top of the hour. And I want to talk to you in the second half about the work you're doing with the Center for Planetary Awakening and your work with the grid lines and ley lines and so on. So we'll just take a short break and we'll be back in a few minutes.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much.
4.5 Welcome. Minutes, Hunter Hayes, Invisible.
Crowded hallways are the loneliest places for outcasts and rebels, or anyone who just dares to be different. And you've been trying for so long to find out where your place is, but in their narrow minds there's no room for anyone who dares to do something different. Oh, but listen for a minute. Trust the one who's been where you are, wishing all it was sticks and stones. Those words cut deep, but they don't mean you're all alone. And you're not invisible. Hear me out. There's so much more to life than what you're feeling now. Someday you'll look back on all these days, and all this pain is gonna be invisible. All invisible. Your confidence is quiet. To them, quiet looks like weakness. But you don't have to fight it, 'cause you're strong enough to win without a war. Every heart has a rhythm. Let yours beat out so loudly that everyone can hear it. Yeah, I promise you don't need to hide it anymore. Oh, and never be afraid of doing something different. Dare to be something more. Just the one who's been where you are, wishing all it was sticks.
And you're back.
Thank you, Dancy. Welcome back to the second half of this week's Cosmic Creating Show. I'm Jan Shaw, the Success Alchemist. You can find me at thesuccessalchemist.net. And I've been having a great conversation with my special guest this week, Carol Fitzpatrick. And in the second half of the show, I really want to delve into the work that you're doing, Carol, with the Centers for Planetary Awakening and the work you're doing with the grid lines and so on. So would you just tell us to begin with what the concept is behind the Centers for Planetary Awakening?
Yes. It's really the amplification of oneness consciousness around the world. And how this is strategically placing centers of light in very energetically significant locations, and they're to be on every major continent. And the definition of a light center, or like souls attracting to one another to a particular frequency, and involving geography, the buildings and the structures and all that come naturally as an evolution of that. But it's basically like attracting like. And the mission is for these various centers, 32 in all, to create this tipping point. They said that we would experience a tipping point after the first 17, that it's involving not just the consciousness shift, but it's also to be acting as a balancing, the stabilizing force for the human energy system. So it involves the rotational shifting, or the rotational spin of the earth as well. So it's a combination of very high vibrational infusion of light coming into the planetary grid, light beings here to embody this light, and to concentrate this light in particular locations. And so a product of that, and the path for us to do that, again, requires us to be really, really still inside and to deeply listen to what is ours to do. Not only to what is ours to be, but what is ours to do. And, you know, I tell people that we're drawn to particular locations and communities for a variety of reasons. And since I've been doing this work, I've really watched, the mass migration patterns happen. The guides were saying that in different time frames that various populations would begin to move about the world. And we were not to be concerned about that, because what is north will become south. What is east becomes west. So in other words, they're talking about the climate shifts based upon the rotational spin of the earth. So that's part of it. And the other part of it is, with this huge infusion of light really coming in waves, that we're to help others to understand, you know, how to open to this light, how to accept, how to allow, and how to really offer up some compassion to yourself, as well as compassion and appreciation for everybody else around you. Because the new frequency waveform of oneness is really rooted in compassion. And they're saying that these are my guides speaking to me through the years, is one of the most unique characteristics of the human race is altruism. And altruism is really demonstrated as compassion, but it's not the kind of compassion that one feels sorry for one another, because they said that's an act of arrogance when you pity another person. But the highest form of compassion is holding another in a deep, deep state of appreciation for who and what they are.
And empathy as well, I would have thought, rather than, I always say I practice empathy, not sympathy, because that puts someone in the victim role again.
Yes, absolutely. Which is another reason why I think I was given that command, get in your body, in 2005, because I have to say, when I was playing the role of a victim, I really wasn't very empathetic toward other people. I was focused on what was wrong with me that, you know, should have been fixed or different. But once I started coming into the body, it's like, oh, this is part of the human condition. And what's happening with me is happening with many other people. In fact, most of us on the planet, you know, are experiencing some pretty intense stuff. So these light centers are to be beacons of light that model oneness consciousness. And one of the key components of these centers is the voicing of wisdom that comes from one's I am presence. In other words, what I've been told and shown is a community cannot be strong without every person's inner light voiced and heard. You know, so oftentimes the very verbose, big personalities in any group setting are the ones that seem to say, oh yeah, we all agree on this. But what I've been shown is some of the most quiet voices are oftentimes the most wise, because they see what no one else is recognizing. And so you need all the voices, and these voices are not opinions. They're coming from a direct connection to one source. And so the model of oneness in community comes from what we do as visioning circles, sacred circles, healing circles, sound healing circles. It is for the purpose of truly honoring the inner voice. And when we do that, it brings forth and starts to amplify the field of oneness. Those separation anxieties and stories of hurt and malice and all that stuff really disappear, because people are so filled with spirit, so filled with light, so filled with that deep knowing that they are loved beyond their human comprehension, that as a collective, they start to amplify, they start to look like earth stars. And I've seen this from the viewing rooms. Oftentimes when I'm working with people, I'll be guided up to what the soul sees before one's incarnation. We go up into what I've come to call a viewing room, and you're looking down on the earth, and your guides are saying, well, where do you want to go? What do you want to do? And oftentimes we light beings will say, oh, that looks very interesting, where there aren't that many lights over there. I think I'll try that. And then we're shown the life that we're going to live and what the setup's going to be. And we say, oh, we can do that. Well, I could do that. I can amplify my light. And of course we get there and most of us are just knocked sideways. Like, whoa, what was I thinking?
Yeah. I didn't expect it to be that hard.
Didn't expect it to be that hard. And yet, now what's happening is when I go up into those viewing rooms to look in on others or to see the earth, I'm starting to see more and more and more and more light all over the planet. There are some fairly large swaths of darkness, but the light is growing. And so these light centers are to be working in a coordinated fashion, where it's not just one center and working in isolation, but a deep knowing that we're all working together to amplify this field.
And what are the, you spoke about 32 centers and key locations.
Yes.
Can you mention a few of those, you know, that's, and also I guess they're connected with the ley lines, are they, of the planet? I mean, I'm not hugely familiar with that. I know, you know, from speaking to you before, you've talked about the ley lines and I've seen it elsewhere. So could you just explain all that for us?
Oh, sure. And, you know, the Earth, if you just look at the Earth as a ball, it's, you know, it's a beautiful planet. But when you recognize that it's spiraling through space, it's going through intergalactic terrain. We don't have a concept because we're a tiny little speck, you know, immersed in its energy field. But it's dynamic and fluid and shifting and morphing and changing. It has a centrifugal force like anything else does. And as it's interacting with the intergalactic terrain, the Earth is being influenced by the space that it's being hurled through. And so the ley lines of the Earth, they're very fluid. They're electrical. And they form a bit of a grid. And they are like a serpent. They arc up and they touch down. They arc up and they touch down. But there's a general sort of a flow of it. And if you look at birds that are migrating, or whales, or fishes in the sea that are running the underground through the underground streams and the oceans, the birds especially offer us a clue to the ley lines. Butterflies, the monarch butterfly, they're flying along those ley lines. That's how they instinctually know where to go, and that they go coming back and forth to the same place each year. And so what we have been guided to do from the beginning is to go and touch in on some of those specific points along specific ley lines to open the ley lines up. Kind of like you've ever been to an acupuncturist, you know, you stick a needle in one part of the body, not just in any part of the body, but where the energy systems, the meridians come together, like the intersecting lines.
And so, yeah, so, and I think the same is similar with EFT, isn't it? Using those energy points.
Yes, it is. And so the Earth has those intersecting lines as well. And so early on, we were guided, go here, stay here, amplify here. And it's a very intuitive process. It didn't necessarily make sense at the time, but the guides said that the best that they can give us is frequency, the feeling of the frequency, and geography. And also time. Time has played a very large role in this too. Like we were told that we were to have four centers identified and established by 2018. There are different time frames, and it has to do with the tipping point for human consciousness. And so we've been guided to various locations to open up portals to recently this February last year, we were guided to Guatemala, which they said was the if we could activate the ancient temple system, it'll light up all the other temples in the world, kind of like turning the lights on. And so some of the places that we were first guided to was down the backbone of the Carolinas, Virginia, North Carolina. And we're given symbols too. In this case, we were given the symbol of the dragon. And come to find out, these various symbols are in the ancient indigenous cultures and transpose over the top of geography over the globe. And so it was early one January, Mark, my husband Mark and I were up in the mountains taking a break. We went on this overlook that we go to meditate. And I heard just as clear as day, send this and this person down to find the tail of the dragon. and they would be guided. And this always comes in with very specific information. So I told my husband, and we went back to the cabin. He got on his cell phone and called the other two people, and they left. And they went on this four-day journey down through North Carolina into the Smoky Mountains. They literally found the road called the Tail of the Dragon, and they did a series of activations down there. And, you know, it's just been, it's sort of been my life to be okay with these mystical things that happen in these directions that come through. And so our first, we spent several years after that opening up ley lines in that area, also in Montana. So what we were shown was a grid line, a series of grid lines. And so first it was North Carolina, which has to do with Arcturians, which are star culture. They're teachers. They're here to help us, to teach us, to show us. And we were there to open up a portal so that we could establish a place to come to and to meditate. We're almost always guided to very pristine natural areas. And that became a point of light, which then we arced forward into Montana around Flathead Lake. We did a lot of work up in Flathead Lake. And we, at some point, I was told to run a parallel line, a lateral line, sorry, from up around Banff, Canada, Lake Louise, and come straight on, run that line straight on down through Wyoming, Yellowstone, and end in Salt Lake City. I didn't know why or any of that, but we did that work. That was about a 10-day journey. And what we find is oftentimes when we do activations, we oftentimes precede other teachers or healers. Like I remember we did an activation in Washington, D.C., and the week later the Dalai Lama came. Another in North Carolina, we did an activation, and the next week a Lakota chief was down there doing sacred ceremony. We're going up in Montana. And it's kind of the same thing where I began to see very clearly that this is a mosaic of light being moved around on the planetary grid. We may be in the same location, but each light group is doing something different. And so we were running lines between North Carolina and Montana. And we were also told that New Mexico, we started looking for the light lines in New Mexico. And through visioning, we got Eagle Nest, New Mexico. So we went looking for there. I flew in there and attended. That's when I met one of my teachers, Bill Bueller, who does, he's no longer with us, but he is a big interdimensional grid person. And that's when I met my now friend that is holding space in the New Mexico Center. We discovered it. Sure enough, he lives in Eagle Nest. So it's one of these things like you follow the breadcrumb trails. And so that became another part of the ley line that we were anchoring. Then we were told that we were to run lines and to do the Guatemala activation and to find the ancient temple at Lake Atitlan. And we did that work last February, like I mentioned. And then to run a line up, they said that Montreal up in Quebec directly connects in as a balancing and stabilizing force for South Africa. South Africa connects up through Morocco, which then goes up through the Northern European area. Wales, Scotland, Ireland. And we have started working and doing activations in Jerusalem. That was this past May. And Kazakhstan, there's a beautiful, beautiful light, a pillar of peace in Mongolia there. And just this next month, we're going to be in Hawaii to pick up on and to and fuse the interdimensional grid with the Lemurian intelligence. And so it's a process that we're being guided to. We were told that we were to spend the next 7 years going down the western backbone of South America. And so we did visioning around that very recently, and we know when we're going and why we're going. And I was told that when I go to Lake Titicaca later this fall, that I would be downloaded with the actual pattern of the light, the actual light centers and their specific purposes. And that the light centers are already formed, and they said that they're really formed by love. And when we connect to those higher visions of ourselves in community, and we infuse our hearts with love beyond measure, that's how we connect. These frequency fields start to anchor in. It's not that the guides used to always say, if we can come high enough, they can come low enough, and they can entrain humanity into a higher state of awareness. We have to, as embodied ones, be courageous enough to fully open our hearts, to claim who we are, to honor who we are, to embody who we are, and to deeply listen to why we're here. And then we'll find one another. We'll amplify the light together. These are centers of light. We'll do it as a coordinated effort. And then we together will cause a major tipping point in a quickening of consciousness in these planetary grids, which, by the way, a lot of the places that we're guided to go, a lot of people go like to Egypt, and they go back and they visit the ancient temples. And I was told that some of those ancient temples are like museums. They don't really hold the potency of the frequency. Some do and some don't.
That's interesting, because I was going to ask you about that, because, you know, I've read that some of the ancient monuments are located on the, you know, specific high frequency areas of the ley lines, like Stonehenge, for example, and the pyramids, and not only the pyramids in Egypt, but also, you know, the pyramids in South America and other places, and maybe Easter Island, who knows. Is that not the case then, or is it that the energy has shifted?
Yes, the energy has shifted, and it's not that they're not going to be more activated, but there's a time sequence to that. And I was just sharing with my husband the other morning, I was being downloaded with information about how the pyramids in Egypt, the reason why they built those pyramids is because the ancient beings that were here knew that the earth was traveling further and further and further away from the star system Syria. So they built those pyramids so that they could go into the king's chamber and amplify the light as long as they could, because they knew that there was going to be a period of about 26,000 years where the earth was going to be moving so far. It's like this, you know, the moon and this going around the earth. It comes closer to the earth, it moves farther away. So the earth in her trajectory was moving further away from the Syrian star system, which many of these beings were from. And so they built the pyramidal system to amplify the light as long as they could, because they knew that they were going to lose the signal over time. And so what's happening is we are in a new rotational spin. The Earth, when we built a water temple up in Montana, which is a stone formation, like a water, it's in the shape of a Star of David in a circle with different stones in the center to amplify the field. And we were told to open up the grid lines to go through the earth to create a new axonal point as the earth shifted, and I was told not to build that temple on a true north, but to build it 17 degrees off northwest, that eventually the true north for the earth is going to be somewhere over Russia. And I think it was this past summer, I started hearing that they're changing the navigational systems on the airplane because true north now has shifted yet again over Russia.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about the pole shift because I've seen various articles about this, and you were talking earlier, you were saying north becomes south, east becomes west. I mean, I've seen it even reported that it will be a complete reversal, that when you said the north will become south, etc., that the pole will shift and almost, you know, the hemispheres will swap places in it, not swap places, but the characteristics will change.
Yes.
Is that something that you...
Like the magnetic poles of a magnet. You know, it doesn't mean that the magnet ceases to exist. It means that it's the polarity shifts.
Mm.
And absolutely, I've seen that. And I've seen it by 2024. 2017 was a big wake-up call. 2022 is a transition year. And 2024 is this huge shifting of the magnetic fields of the earth. It's like the serpent energy does, like, have you ever seen anybody crack a whip?
Yes, I've done it myself.
Well, there you go. Well, you know how the undulation in the whip, and then you get to the end of the tail of the whip and it makes that cracking sound.
Yep.
So it's like all the energy that you've put in to the force to crack the whip really culminates in the tail end of that that energy, that line. And so that's what the Earth does in 2024. And of course,
what will that mean to us on a physical level?
Let me try to. Have you ever gone up into an elevator really, really quick and not expecting it to be so quick?
Yeah.
Okay. That's what it's going to feel like in a way, but it's going to take that times 1,000. And it's going to feel like your orientation to gravity is just all discombobulated. And it may go on for a couple days, a couple weeks or so for the fallout of it for people that really... If you're really focused on the horizon line, up, down, right, left, you're kind of going to be in trouble. And I remember the very first time my guides prompted me to roll out of my body so that they could physically show me different galaxies and how different worlds are and what they look like and how they... How you are in a body. And I resisted it for about 3 weeks. And then finally I said, okay, I'm going to have to do this because I know I'm honor bound. And when I first rolled out, I just screamed for my life because, oh my gosh, you lose control, right? You don't have any sense of your horizon line. But once I truly just let go and just said, okay, I'm going to trust my guides, I recognize that this world is very unique, this whole thing about gravity. And so when the poles shift, if you really are in the place, which, by the way, I think that's part of the reason why they're trying to get us to really get into our heart space, because the heart space is not linear. It doesn't need to be grounded. It really is it discerns the flow. The heart is as close to how the soul ebbs and tides with the flows with the tide, and whereas the mind has got to be fixed on the horizon line. And so when this happens, we're going to feel that way. We're going to feel like we're completely disconnected from the field, which we will be, frankly. And we will be reconnected with what I call the new earth frequency, the new earth field, which is a much, much higher frequency where everybody is totally connected. We're in group mind, group thought, group awareness, and we become quite understanding that we are truly empowered and our thoughts really do mean exactly what we think. And I do see that the Earth already is firing off. She's already getting ready to do this shift. Someone sent me a meme of the earthquake activity that was put out by NASA recently. And you can see the earthquake activity. You can see the tectonic plate system starting to loosen up and shift. And I've seen tremendous land movement during this time. And if you're thinking about it as this is horrible, blah, 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 you're kind of missing the point, because this is really why we as light beings are actually here. And this idea of ushering in an entirely new way of being is why we're here. And the children that are here, like I said, they already know, they're already in their hearts and they don't have to do this shift. And earlier prophetic visions that had come in had said 25% of the population will be left after this entire transitional peace. But what I recognize, it's really not about death and destruction. It really is about the ascension process. I can't tell you that I am the same person that I was when I was 20. I feel like I'm completely different. I haven't changed my personality, but I do know that the light that is in me is the predominant presence, even though sometimes I get freaked out by life still. And that's what it feels like. The higher frequencies of the soul in our embodied state is starts to roll with the punches, if you will, and starts to live life on this new terra firma, this new consciousness grid, which does connect to the Earth and does revitalize the Earth's ecosystems. And we become very empowered as a collective consciousness to co-create and to work with the Earth and to manage the energy patterns of Mother Nature and so forth to be in alignment. Right now, we're completely out of alignment. And it's obvious pretty much to everybody on the planet that we really are.
And I think that was why I was guided to hold the festival in nature. You know, I mean, it was a beautiful setting with the Rocky Mountain National Park and everything. It couldn't possibly have been held in a city. And that was a proposal that was made to me, and it was like, no way, there's no way it can happen, because I just, it was part of this reconnection with the planet, with nature, that, you know, we've become so separated from.
Yeah, I really that festival really changed the course of my life, in the sense of, it's like, wow, if we can do this here with people we've never met before, and yet they're so open and accepting to stand in circle, to amplify the light, to totally honor one another and each other's voice, then we can do this anywhere. We can do this all over the world. And I just absolutely loved the feeling of those morning and afternoon circles.
Yes, I was sharing that with somebody not long ago, actually, about those, you know, setting the intention for the day and that theme progressing through the week. Yes, it was. And I mean, your team made, you know, you really delivered those so brilliantly with the different modalities. It was such a great beginning to every day of the festival.
Well, thank you. And I really love it when the healers and the innovators and the artists step forward and simply share from their heart what they know. And that's the way it really needs to be in community, and to really honor a person when they're really coming from their heart space. because that's when true healing and transformation occurs.
Yes, absolutely. And I'm glad you brought up this, the topic of the ascension process and the new earth, because I did want to ask you about that. And, you know, I've heard from somebody the ascension is going to happen 2021, in effect, 12/21 or 12/21. I need to put it in American format, 12/21/21. And also leading up to the 2012 shift, I watched a movie that was all about the new earth, and I've seen this elsewhere as well, representing it as like a splitting of the old earth and the new earth. Now, whether that's in physical form or in energetic form, what kind of messages have you had about when this ascension process is going to happen? Is it 2024? As you said, this whole magnetic field will shift. And will it be? Will the people that you're saying the 25%, will they be left behind in like another dimension to continue their ascension process rather than, you know, physically dying or disappearing?
Yeah, that's that was interesting. So I finished my work day yesterday and went into the house, and my husband Mark had a person on that practices hypnotherapy and, you know, discerns what the different people are saying about where they go and that sort of thing. And she was describing them saying that they're going to a different earth, and they feel very sad because their loved ones aren't there, and there are very, very few of them, but they act kind of like as a bridge to beacon to them for people to make their choice. But as they look around, they're kind of living in the trees, and it's very lush, and nature's everywhere. And in part, the future visioning that I have done, people have had those visions. In other words, I'm here, I'm next to the water, I'm so grateful to be alive. There are very, very few of us here, but I have everything I need. I want for nothing. I can feel, even though very few people are around, I can feel that there are others like me here. And so now that it's interesting, the energy is shifting. So I'm going to internally ask what is really true in terms of the dynamic, and are we interpreting what we see correctly in our mind's eye? And so let me just ask here. So these are my guides showing up. They come in as a collective, and they're saying that we understand the dilemma of the human nature. The human mind wants everyone to stay together, wants everyone to stay safe, wants everything to stay the same. And they're saying, but you have come here to ascend. You have come here to fully honor who you are in the relative nature of your life here upon the planet. And you have come here as a collective to make choice as a collective consciousness. You have not come here to separate yourself out from others. So in other words, the angelic beings that teach me too, they say they don't see humanity as separate. Like they don't see you and me and the guy down the street as separate. They see humanity as one, kind of like an amoeba that grows together, expands together, makes choice together. Even though there might be separate parts coming along, aspects of self coming along, we're still here as a together. And so they're saying that this is what we've really come here for. We've come here to infuse light within ourselves, knowing that we are all one with the all. There is to be no separation. So these visions or of two Earths, of a separate Earth or a separate planetary system, they're saying what you're really seeing is the mirror twin of the Earth-like planet in the Andromeda galaxy, that many of us have been, had many incarnations in the Andromeda galaxy. The Andromeda Galaxy Earth hasn't been tainted or corrupted the way that this Earth has. And so when we think about the utopia in which we go to, we're actually infusing that consciousness within us. We're like having these strong memories of the fact that we know what's possible as we fully ascend and shift the consciousness of this Earth. And so they're saying that remember where you are and what you are. Remember how you are here to serve and that you are all one. That what is happening to one individual is on some very subtle level happening to everyone. So if someone is harming self or harming another, it's on this in the subtle field, it's happening to everyone. Everyone is affected. And so they're saying this shift in consciousness happens here on Earth, and yet there's a great infusion of light that occurs from the Andromeda Galaxy because of those of us who are embodied and who also remember are going to receive this infusion, like a transfusion within us, and that is what's going to cause the quickening of consciousness here on this planet. And yet we stay here, we live here, we honor what is here. And some of the visions that we see in our mind's eye, think about a turtle that feels as though it is walking 1,000 miles. That understanding of what 1,000 miles is, if you pan back, the turtle is experiencing maybe going 10 feet into its path, but we can see that it's actually not that far from our perspective. But from the turtle's perspective, it's walking hundreds and hundreds of miles. And so they're saying this is how humanity is perceiving one's reality, the reality of what's happening. Life is happening very quickly. The quickening is happening. It's already happening. It's not happening, and it's not happening in the future. It's actually happening now. The higher frequency grid is on the planet now. They're saying just watch the birds, watch the human species as you are interacting with the animal kingdom. The animal kingdom is starting to see you. They're starting to understand that you can speak to them, you can telekinetically understand them, and they can understand you. And it's already happening. They're saying, but the quick time of the quickening, just like the cracking of the whip that you do with predictability, you've done it so many times, Jan, that you know that, yes, if I do it this way, it's probably going to crack, right?
Yes.
But right now, we're just getting our practice. Humanity is practicing cracking the whip, if you will. Practicing for that moment in time, that seeming moment in time when everything is infused with light, and it comes as visions of the great flash in the sky. And the great flash in the sky for some will put terror in their hearts because they don't understand, and for others they'll say, ah, it's arrived. The great flash in the sky, the great infusion of light. In other words, the grid system that we've been building all this time, it's stable enough. It's balanced enough. There's enough souls in all these different locations enough. We are awake enough. We are allowing enough. So now as a great flash in the sky occurs, we're all infused with it, and we are all helping one another to integrate. And that's what I believe that you're doing with your radio show and with your coaching. And that's what I'm doing in my way. And that's what everybody that I know is doing in their way. We're all doing it because we feel the inward call to do that. And so for me, I am seeing, they put numbers in front of me, right? So I'm saying 2024. So for me, the time to be fully anchored and to have what I'm to be doing in place is 2024. In other words, that's a big milestone for me because part of what I'm to be doing is creating centers of light, i.e. communities that model oneness, that integrate oneness in everyday life. So in other words, people will say, oh my God, what do we do now? Well, they'll find their way to these different communities and it's all right there. Or they may come in and say, I just need to rest for a while. I don't know what's happened to me, but I need to rest. And so all they need is an infusion of light, so to speak, for them to rest. See, so for someone else, a quickening may happen 2021. I've personally seen visions and knowings in our last visioning circle that the light ships, I heard the words, the light ships will have come and gone by 2022. They will have come and gone. Like, well, why are they here? Why would they come in the first place? I don't know the answer to that. All I know is it's a really good thing that the light ships in 2022 will have come and gone. 2023 feels like a time of deep rest and sort of laying low and just really integrating. And 2024 is like, okay, we got to get up and do what we've come here to do in earnest, you know, put it into motion. So
we're in kind of a preparation time for that then.
Yes, mm-hmm. yes.
And what you were saying before about collective consciousness, I mean, it almost seems like, you know, we've got the people who are awakened, who are very consciously developing themselves spiritually and personally. But then we have another collective consciousness that is still very much asleep and still very much mesmerized, for want of a better word, by the whole 3D programming and totally disconnected from the spiritual. So are they going to be affected by this influx of light, or are they going to make up that 25% that don't come with us?
I've always been told that no one would be left behind, that during the time of the Christ, that the plan was to have one among us to ascend. And if one could ascend, then that would open the door for all to ascend. And in our time, the plan, from what I'm understanding, is that we all ascend as one. So in other words, humanity goes as one.
And yet, right, so not as individuals.
Right, so it gets tricky in terms of the individual choice or individual sovereignty, right?
Mm.
And so at the time of this great quickening of light, if an individual who's really stuck in their stuff and they just, it can't seem to compute for them, then they get together in group consciousness with a other grouping of souls, and they decide to ascend, not by waking up, if you will, but they ascend through physical demise. They get caught in a landslide. They go into earthquake mode. They get hit by a cyclone. You know, these kinds of things happen on the planet all the time. I know when 9/11 hit, I was shown how those 3,000 some odd people were caught by angels, and it could have been a different way, but they said, okay, we'll do it this way to help humanity, to create a quickening of consciousness. Now, is it really happening on the conscious mind? I would say absolutely not. And even the idea that someone would even choose something like that in our human mind would even be atrocious to even put out there. But on the soul level, we do that all the time. We make those kinds of choices all the time for the betterment or for the quickening of consciousness of the whole. Mothers do that for their children every day of the week. A mother will run out in the middle of the street to rescue the child only to be run over by the truck herself.
Mm.
And so these are ultimate acts of kindness and surrender that get played out as dramatic stories. But at the same time, however we ascend en masse is what we do.
It's just that we'll use different means to do it.
Exactly. Exactly. And I'm just being shown during the time of ancient Greece, when the asteroid hit the Earth and the Earth went into a huge wobble effect, there were major, major earthquakes and seismic tremorings all over the Earth, and there was continental shifts in the tectonic plates. And many of those ancient cities and so forth went underwater. I mean, you can go see them and you can look at satellite images now. And so to say that this has never happened before is a bit foolhardy. You know, it's just that we don't have a memory in our mind that far back. But I can tell you for sure that most of us have that in our energetic systems as a memory, a soul memory.
Right.
And it gets triggered when we think that something like that's going to happen because it's frankly out of our control. You know, it's part of the ultimate unpredictability about living in a human body on planet. So yeah, the quickening is all as one, truly all as one. And however you choose your reality, given how open you are and accepting you are, allowing you are, it's all going to happen to everybody at the same time, but how your experience is going to be completely different than the person next to you. And it used to be when we were in, I used to do once a month intensives where we just opened up and allowed these various energetic teachers to show us. And one of the things that was said was, when you get to the call to go or to serve or to be, you could be sitting right next to your best friend, your mother, your father, your twin sister. And if you're called to go, then you go. You don't question. And you do not try to pull the other with you. You honor your calling and you allow the other person to honor their calling. Because if you do that, they will be in the right place at the right time and you will be in the right place at the right time for what you're here for.
I think that's a great message to end with, actually. And we're coming right up to the end of the show. And it's been absolutely fascinating, Carol. I've really enjoyed all the information, the wisdom that you've had to share. And so wonderful that you actually had your guides come in and join us as well. That was great.
Well, it's been so much fun talking about this stuff. This is just the best. I really appreciate you.
Thank you. Well, I appreciate you too. And before we finish, would you like to share your contact information, how people can find out more about you and maybe get in touch with you?
Oh, sure. For the personal transformational work and the sort of the bigger picture of what we're doing, they can go to onenessofbeing.org. That's onenessofbeing.org. And the new charitable organization, and which is 100% devoted to the 32 Centers mission, is simply 32centers.org. And that will either website will get people plugged in. And if they sign up like on the Oneness of Being site, their email, then that puts you in the loop to start to receive information and invitations and free webcasts and things like that, so that we can share what we're doing and invite others into the process with us.
Wonderful. Well, thank you again, Carol. It's been an absolute pleasure to reconnect after a long gap and really have a great conversation. So I'd like to thank all our listeners. I'm going to sign off, Jan Shaw, the Success Alchemist. You can find me at thesuccessalchemist.net. And also on YouTube and Facebook, just look for Jan Shaw, the Success Alchemist. And that's S-H-A-W. I know my English accent doesn't always sound like the right spelling, but it's S-H-A-W. So thank you so much.
And thank you, Nancy, for producing. And I hope you'll be with me for next week's show.
Appreciate you both.
Thank you so much.
You have been listening to the Cosmic Creating Radio Show with Jan Shaw, a production of Cosmic Reality Radio.
Live long and prosper.